some months ago when we were coming up with ideas of who we might have speak at the meeting, one idea thrown out there was, well, let's get some of the young people up here. And I thought, that excludes me, because I feel like I'm getting old. And then they said, not so fast. So I am still one of the younger generations. And so we hope to have a somewhat cohesive theme this week. It's a broad theme, and it is how to be a better servant. And that's broad because, well, for one, we're all servants, or we should all think of ourselves as servants, but it's a pretty broad thing. But hopefully we can bring you some sort of perspective, some sort of idea that at least will maybe spark some other ideas and come together. But for one, I want to focus today on setting us up for this, setting us up in our role as a servant, and as a group, how we should be a group of servants. So this is something, serving, is something that should be central to our Christianity. We know that Christ, I'm going to reference a few verses quickly here, so you may not have time to flip to them, but Christ lived an example of serving others, and there's not one single verse that could really encompass that, but if you studied the life of Christ, you would see Christ did not do a thing for himself. Mark 10, verse 45, for even the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, not to be cared for, not to have his needs met, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. And secondly, if you've heard me speak, and bless some of your hearts, you have heard me speak a lot in the past couple of years, but if you have heard me speak, you've probably known that one of the things I've really kind of attached to over these past few years is our duties can be grouped into two classes. And that is something when Jesus was asked, when he was kind of tempted, what's the greatest commandment? Pick one. What's the most important thing? That in Matthew 22, verse 37, Jesus' response is two categories here. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. If you were to go back and look at the Ten Commandments under the old law, you will see that they group into two. The first, what we typically enumerate as the first four, would fall under duties to God. What he has said is the first and great commandment. Now back in Matthew 22, verse 39, he gives the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and all the prophets, and the prophets. Those last six commandments, commandments 5 through 10, if you're looking at the old law, group under duties, responsibilities that go to your community. The smallest, most intimate unit of that community is your family. But what is notably absent from those two groups is a duty to the self. There's not one really listed. And so those two commandments, as Jesus says them, basically encompass what our two purposes should be, to serve God and to serve others, not to put ourselves first. So, although that is somewhat of a broad topic, how to better achieve these two duties, service to God, service to others, is how I would like this week's goal to go. So tonight I want to focus on how we can be better helpers. And I think in a year or two past I've done something similar, but this one is a slightly different focus. And I want to more specifically focus on how we can be better helpers as a group. That is to be a group of helpers, to be a team, to have better teamwork. So, being a better team and being a better teammate so that this team works better in these duties of service. And one thing we want to get out of the way is when we talk about helping, it's a very active process. Helping is not a handout. And if you even go to the old law and look at examples of where they were instructed to help others, there's a really interesting way it's set up. I won't read the passage, but in Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10, they were instructed to basically leave tracts of land for the poor, so that the poor could work those tracts of land for themselves. And that's a unique thought, because it's not just give the poor this stuff, give them the food. It is show them that plot of land, have them work it. Now that opens up a lot of possibilities, because now might you have a relationship that might develop from these people you see working on your land? Might you go help them yourself? In any case, what we see there is it's not just giving them a thing. And so our ability to help, our duties to help, need to follow that in mind, is that there is some sort of active component going on here, not a thing I give you and then walk away from. And that might be the central theme here. So this idea of being a better helper, I will say, is also somewhat vague and broad, and there's no way we can cover every possible way to help each other be better teammates, help each other be other helpers. There's so many different ways we could do it. And so I'm going to neglect something, and I apologize, and I'm sure there's more you're going to think of along the way. But it's from helping others that we really can leave a lasting impression. Now, those of you at Tales Cross Roads, whenever I gave this last, some amount of this topic, I named names. Brother Mark wasn't here, so I get to name his name this time. But my lasting memories of the people I see out in this audience that I've known for years, my lasting memories don't have anything to do with what happened during a service. They do not have to do with when we began the service and when we ended the service. It all has to do with something outside of here. That's where it sticks. And one example I remember Brother Mark doing is pulling a bird out of my mother's grill, her car grill. There's been many other things Brother Mark has done, but that one sticks out in my mind. And he didn't have to do that. And if you ask Jennifer, she'd tell you, boy, it must be nice to have someone pull a bird out of your car grill. That's a whole story that I'll let her tell when you want her to. But those are the memories that really leave an impression. And those are the memories that tell you and show you this is a Christian helping. And helping not expecting anything in return, but this is what they do for someone they care about, a fellow member of their team, a fellow Christian. And that's the kind of group we need to be for each other. So now I want to get to some specific things, some specific aspects of helping. And these are going to sound different than maybe what you're expecting. And I'll say they were different than what I was expecting, because this is a combination of things that I've noticed or have heard over the years. And they are things that I've heard, and I've heard outside of the service, and realize we don't talk about them too much in the service. But they must be important, because they keep coming up. And they keep coming up in surprising ways sometimes. So, and I'll be the first to tell you, when it comes to helping and being a good teammate, I struggle at it. I'm not a people person. I know I need to be better at that. I need to work at that. And I need help at that on our theme of help here. But it's still something that's important. And there are ways of helping our teammates, our fellow Christians, the fellow members of our congregation, that have more to do with than just, here's a thing, or let me pull this out for you. And these are things that have come up over the years, and I have focused on being a member of a community more than I ever thought I would, because most of you know I've spent my life, well, not my life, but my work life at a university, and then at another university. And it gets to be a bit of an isolating experience there to be someone who even believes in God, much less the way we do, at a university where I can tell you from the other side of the curtain, they're pushing some things that are certainly not godly. And it's a bit isolating, and I've realized the only time there is a group of people, or at least two or three gathered together, that believe the same thing I do, and I can say certain phrases to them, and they know what that means. The phrase, Lord willing, only happens here with you. This is my group. And so it's this team that I've been focusing on. So this morning, I didn't count the number, but this morning we read off a lengthy prayer list. And I'm sure at all the congregations round about, you had a fairly lengthy prayer list as well. Have you ever added someone to that prayer list? Yeah, probably everyone has. Here's a tougher question. What have we done to get them off the prayer list? Now, not just in healing them, because, you know, we're not likely to be the one who's going to go in there and suture that up and remove this ailment and do that surgery. That's not us. I don't mean it in that way. I mean, have we followed up with them, the people that we have put on the prayer list? We have names on prayer lists roundabout across all the congregations that have been on there for months, maybe even years. And a few interesting things pop up, which is we don't really remember who put them on there, and we don't remember why they're on there. And we just keep reading the name. Now, hey, I'd rather be safe than sorry and just keep praying for this person. That's fine with me. But shouldn't there be some degree of follow-up? Shouldn't we find out who we're praying for? What's wrong with them? What we can do to help? Maybe there are some things we could do. I'm sure if they're in for medical reasons and it's a long-term thing, they need gas, there's hospital bills, there's food, house bills, all these different things. But some of them just need calling and visiting. They just need someone to sit and listen to them or talk with them. There's no good way I can exhaust that list, but there's a lot of ways we can follow up with them. But if no one's checking on them, if no one's following up with these names on the prayer list, we risk them just becoming a name. And we aren't supposed to pray for names, we're supposed to pray for people and the ailments they have. And if I ignore this name on the list and don't know who it is and what's wrong with them or who in the world put them on the list, they're going to become just a name. And especially if they're one of the members of the congregation, we should definitely want to be following up with them. But it is easier now than ever to reach out to people, but we still don't. Number one struggler at communication here. I'll get a message and I'm going to reply to this just as soon as I finish that. A week will go by and I've never replied. But it's still easier now than ever to reach out to someone and check. Do you know who so-and-so is? What's wrong with them? Have they gotten better? What are they struggling with? What do they need? Because we will put names on the list, and maybe they heal, maybe they're better, but we should follow up with them. So the solution here, I think, is that we got to have some amount of responsibility of following up with the people we've put on the prayer list. If they're important enough for me to add to the prayer list, are they not important enough for me to also check on them? How are they doing? But I asked for their prayers. I asked for them to be put on the prayer list. I should probably be the one to update everyone else. Hey, I have checked on Sister so-and-so and she's doing great. You know, let's keep praying for her, but I think we can remove her from the immediate needs if that's okay. We don't want just a list of names. We're praying for people. Now, with the duty to love thy neighbor as thyself, as we reference from Matthew 22, we can't ask God to love those neighbors for us. We've got to be the ones doing it. There is, we can't use prayer, well, I prayed for someone, as a means to dodge responsibility. There's still something we can do. I won't read the entire story leading up to it, but one of my favorite phrases is, for such a time as this. Now, a lot of you are going to remember that from Esther. Now, without giving the entire backstory, Esther is in a unique position. Mordecai, her mentor, father figure, is upset. and worried about the entire people of the Jews being wiped out by a decree, and is asking, is telling Esther, and Esther's going to, he replies to tell Esther something, the point being, you are in this position for such a time as this. That's in Esther chapter 4, I'll read verse 14. Esther chapter 4, verse 14, Mordecai, who has told Esther, you theoretically have access to the king. There's a little caveat there. And says in verse 14, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? You are in the unique position to do the thing that we need. And she says, basically, have everyone fast, which was typically accompanied with prayer. I'll do the same, and then I'll go do the thing. I'll try. We too are put in positions. If I know someone well enough and know that they've been hurt, they're sick, or they're going through a hard time, whatever it might be, and I would like to add them to the prayer list, I'm in a unique position now to be the one to check on them, to follow up with them. Maybe there's something I can do for them in addition to adding them to a prayer list. But the point being, you're in a position to follow up. All right, so the next way we can help each other, our team, is visiting. Visiting one another. Now, I've noticed there's a little, I don't know if you'd call it a logic trap, but there's a little trap we find ourselves in at times. So most of you will probably say or note that we've done a lot to avoid the impression that we have one single preacher. We don't have a quote minister, a quote pastor. We don't. And we've done a lot to avoid even giving the impression that there's just one. Okay, the male members all have the ability, capability to speak one at a time, to do the portions of the worship service. And so we say that's not a thing we have, where there's this one person who does everything. Yet functionally, that's oftentimes what happens, is that we expect one person to kind of handle a lot, especially in small congregations, but it happens in large ones. In years past, step on my own toes, I've probably let a lot fall and just think, oh, Brother Greg will handle that. But do I not also have a responsibility? Do we not all have a responsibility? So we treat these meetings, these revivals, historically like, well, there's a preacher coming from out of town to visit, and they're going to go around and visit everyone. That's not bad at all. That's great. But which is it? We have one preacher who's supposed to do all the visiting and handling of that, or we all do it? We should all do it. We should all visit. We should all check on each other. Now, there's a good point to be that sometimes you need an outside perspective. That is 100% true. But that doesn't absolve the rest of us from checking on each other, from visiting each other. Also, we should do it year-round. I wish we wouldn't have to look at what this week is as a revival more so than maybe as a reminder or a recheck-in. But sometimes we look at it that way. Now, there's a lot of additional benefits that come from going to visit each other, our congregational team. And that is what I've said over the years, which is helping is a skill. And you can learn to help. But at first, you may not know how to. Or you may not have had the guidance. And these visits, just following someone, go visit someone else, can teach you a lot. Just riding in the car with them over there can help you learn a lot. I've heard some of you talk about the memories you have and the things you learned from your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ was just riding down the road with them. And that can happen going to visit one another. So even if you think, I can't help that person, I don't know how, find someone who does. Because now you can gain some mentorship. You've gained a mentor, someone who can teach you how to help, which is almost like another trap we find ourselves in. Many times we say, well, a lot of people are afraid to attend services because they have said, I'm just not good enough. I have my boss, she has a nephew. He grew up not religious. He started dating someone who was from a Church of Christ, as they call it, I think one with a class system. And he would not attend services with her. And she was telling me, and I said, why? And she said, he said he feels like he wouldn't know what to do and he's not good enough to attend. That's not what we're going for, right? And we tell people, don't think like that. Just come. Please come. Yet we will find ourselves, maybe I will find myself, using the same excuse as to why I'm not the person to go visit them. I'm not good enough at keeping up a conversation. I'm not good enough about what they need. Maybe they need a light bulb changed. Maybe they need a ramp built. I don't know how to do any of that. But I bet you someone else here does. And I bet you they wouldn't mind if you asked, could you go with them? Now, you get to watch someone experienced. Help them. You learn how they do it. Not only do you gain that skill, and you go visit someone, maybe you learn how to build a ramp and how to change a light bulb. And years down the road, you're the one going to build the ramp. You're the one going to help cook for them because they can't. There's a lot of skills we can gain, a lot of fellowship we can have if we work together and then we visit each other. Visit the sick. Visit the lonely. Take someone with us. So now for the next several, we're going to have kind of a focus change. And this is where it gets maybe ones we've never thought of, or at least ones that I haven't heard talked about much of in the service. Now, to get us all on the same page, I want to read off several verses that all have a common theme, and they're verses most of you are probably very familiar with. And they're about making sure we're on the same page. They're about coming together. They're about unifying. So, those with the same belief, being of the same mindset, these are going to go fast, so you may not have time to flip to them. In 1 Peter 3:8, he writes, be ye of one mind, having compassion one of another. I'm going to read from three of them, from 1 Corinthians now, that have a similar idea. 1 Corinthians 1:10, he's talking about divisions in beliefs, but still he says, now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. A verse that Brother Mark read just this morning when going through the Lord's Supper, 1 Corinthians 11:33. Wherefore, my brethren, when you come together to eat, for the purposes of the Lord's Supper, tarry one for another. Get your congregation whole, be together, be whole, and consider each other. Staying one more in 1 Corinthians 14:23, if therefore the whole church be come together into one place, and we use this verse a lot to point out that we're not divided, we're unified. And all of this is to point out, same mindset, same beliefs, we're on the same page, we're not here with different agendas. And one last one going down to Hebrews 10:25. I won't read the entire verse, but it's in Hebrews 10:25 where we come across the phrase, the assembling of ourselves together. So the common theme here is that we're all of one mindset, we're unified, we're on the same page. That's our goal. But how can we be joined together? How can we be unified? How can we be one assembly if we don't know what each other is saying? Now, that could be both in terms of content, but I'm actually meaning one that we don't discuss much up here, which is not being able to physically hear. I have, over the years, going across different congregations, been humbled by the number of people who have trouble hearing. I take my hearing for granted. probably take my sight and all my senses for granted. I'm used to them. I've had them for a while. But there's been many times where after a service, I've heard someone say to me, "I'm sure it was good, I just couldn't hear." How can we be of one mindset if we can't all hear the same thing? How can we amen if we don't know what we've heard? Now, I wish I could fix ears, but I cannot fix ears. Maybe as a group we could help get hearing aids or something, but what can we do as a group of people to help? Some solutions: we can try to get microphones, we can try to get speakers. I need to try. If you have heard me over the past few years, I've probably said, I can't project. I'm not a loud person. I don't come from too loud of a people. Depends if you knew my grandmother. But otherwise, I don't really come from a loud group of people. And my voice doesn't carry. Sometimes I feel like I've got to eat this microphone to make sure you can hear me. And if you've heard me lead a song, it probably sounds like I'm waiting 3 minutes between reading the number. But it's because over the years, it's kind of hit me a few times. Wow, I led that song up there and felt isolated for a while. No one heard which number you called. Started singing, and there I was alone again. You didn't give people time to flip to the page. Oh. Those are things I can control. I can't control how well everyone can hear. I wish I could help. But I got to do what I can. And that's something with this mindset of considering one another, is how hard it is for some of our beloved brothers and sisters in Christ to hear. We got to find a way to get the volume up, to project our voice, to get the numbers out. There's a variety of solutions. I know at Hope's Bluff they've started trying to put the numbers up even. So if you can't hear through the microphone, maybe there's something visual there. I'm not saying there's any one set solution for that, but I'm saying it seems like it's a problem. If the people we care about, the people on our team, are having trouble hearing, what can we do to help them? Hopefully we can ask if they can hear. All right, so that one's kind of a simple solution, but it's an important one, or a simple matter. The next ones are more difficult. These are hard questions to ask in our congregations, but I think they're important based on things I've heard over the past few years, again, across a variety of congregations. Think about your congregation. If this is your home congregation or whichever your home congregation is, think about all of your members of the congregation and ask this of them, but also ask this of ourselves. Do you think everyone in the congregation feels supported? Do you think everyone in the congregation knows how to reach each other if they do need help, or just to talk? Does everyone in the congregation know what decisions are being made kind of under the name of the congregation? Does everyone know what we're doing, who we're supporting, financial support or whatever it might be? Does everyone in the congregation feel like they're a vital part, member, teammate of the congregation, or do they feel like they're just there? Have you ever felt like you were just there? Show up, and I leave. We need to feel a part of the congregation, and we need to make sure that we all feel like a part of the congregation. An essential part of being within any group is to feel like you're accepted, you're getting attention, people in that group care about you, and you get support from the group. do you always feel that way? And do you think everyone else in your congregation feels that way? I'm worried that's not the case for several people in our congregations. And some things I've heard over the years, again, across several congregations, is phrases like, I really don't know what's going on in my congregation. I'm just there, or nobody really tells me anything. I hear this from men and women, unmarried, widowed, people who have someone else in the congregation with them and someone who's just there by themselves. But these are things that I have heard more than once over the years. And stepping on my own toes, I have talked plenty about how our service requires effort. That we really shouldn't be someone who just shows up here, conducts the service, and leaves. We should put some amount of thought, preparation, into what we're actually doing when we do come together. But we can't just be here. And we can't set people up to feel like they're just here. So do we set some of these members up? Do I set some members of the congregation up for failure, as in not feeling like they belong? Do I make them feel part of the congregation? Do I make them feel belong, or do I make them think, you're just here? Do I ignore them? Do I check on them when they haven't shown up for a while? Do I make them feel like they belong, and do I tell them what's going on? Among the other things that I'm bad at, it's communication and updating people. In general, some stuff will be revealed about me, and someone close to me will say, I didn't know all that. Oh, well, you didn't ask. I could have been more forthcoming with information what's going on. But we too, as a congregation, can. Signs like, I'm just here and I don't really know what's going on, those are not a good sign. Think about if you went to some sort of business. Not long ago, I went to the dentist and something got disorganized. I don't know if it was my being there or what. And the hygienist, whose room I was kind of shuffled into, was saying things like this. What? No one tells me anything. I don't know. My first thought was, I'm not sure I want you to stick sharp things in my mouth. Because that's not a good sign. You don't sound like you just love it here. Well, what does that say about our congregation? If we've got several people who say similar things. Now, let's imagine I feel that way. Let's imagine that I say these things about Taylor's Crossroads. That I say, I don't know what's going on. I'm just there. What if some stranger, someone that I've been trying to say, hey, we've talked about the Bible. You know, you haven't been to a service yet. Would you like to come with me? If they asked me, well, what's it like there for you? And if I said, I don't know, I'm just kind of there. How inviting does that sound for them? Does that sound like a place they also want to come? I've probably scared them away if that's my attitude about the place. But we have our Christian family, our team, the other people we're to help, we're to be helpers with, sometimes feel that way. So chances are we have felt that way either within a congregation, but I would bet if we look back, whether it was at work or at school, we were in some sort of group situation and we did not feel like we were really part of the group. We probably couldn't wait for that job to be over with, that group project to be done, or whatever it was. We don't want that with our team, the people we love. Now, some of these things could be self-inflicted. You know, if I come here at the last minute and the last syllable of amen is uttered and I'm out the door, I'm not doing myself any favors. I'm making myself just there. Sure, maybe my schedule is odd, but those are some things that would be on me. So, but I'm talking about the other side of it. I'm talking about what we, as the other members of the congregation, can do. So these questions again. Does everyone feel supported? Does everyone know how to reach out and connect with each other? Does everyone know what decisions are being made, what we're doing, who we're supporting, whether it's financially or we've gone to help this person? Some of these, I think, have quick solutions. We talked about a few of them earlier. If our members don't feel supported, we can go visit them. We talked about visiting. That's a good one. Know how to reach each other? It's 2024. It's easy to create a contact list and find a way to share it. We're not all great with our phones and if we actually use it, but okay, we can come up with a way to get everyone's name and number. We can do that. The hardest part of that, and with any endeavor where there's a group involved, is getting someone to actually start it. There's an interesting social psychological phenomenon where the more people you have to help, the less likely you're to get help. Unless you nominate someone. If you're ever in a crowded area, you're having an emergency, don't say, help, call 911. Say, you in the blue shirt, call 911. You are more likely to get help that way. It's well established. We got to do the same where if we want a contact list being made, we need to say, hey, so-and-so, would you make a contact list? And that goes for many of the things we're talking about here, where it's a group effort. But these other ones, knowing what decisions we're making, how we're spending the money, what we're sending to Africa, all the different decisions. I don't know what they all are. I'm just making some up. But all these things are a little more sensitive now. Because now we're talking about money, now we're talking about what we often call business meetings. And I think it's here where I've done a terrible job about disseminating the information that I walk away with. And that is why I think some people may also feel, I don't know, I show up and everything's different. No one's told me what's happened or what's changed. Now, if we look, the point I'm getting at is, remember the idea was that we're all together. Unified, same mindset, no divisions, assembled together, we're in it together. Lack of division. If we have those who feel like they're a vital part of the congregation and those who do not, we're not all together. If we have those who know everything that's going on and those who know nothing that's going on through no fault of our own, we've got a division. We're not all on the same page. And it's these things that I think we need to work on as a group. It's these things where I struggle with. It's these things where I'm not good at getting that information out. And so I think I have a lot to do with why some people may feel like they don't know what's going on. But as a group, we should consider these things. The biblical example, as far as I can tell, is to update the entire congregation. In 1 Thessalonians 5, at the end, Paul tells them what to do with this information. This letter, 1 Thessalonians 5:27. I charge you by the Lord that this epistle, this letter he's written, be read unto all the holy brethren. That's not the only one. Colossians. In Colossians chapter 4, verse 16. Colossians 4:16, he says, and when this epistle is read among you, cause that it be read also in the church, the Laodiceans, and that ye likewise read the epistle from Laodicea. Two explicit examples where Paul has said, what I've put in this letter you need to disseminate to everyone. Did it go to a small group first, then another small group? I don't know. It sounds more like it was read in front of everyone. But if you look at the entire letter of the Colossians, he makes some direct addresses. In Colossians 3, he directly addresses wives. He directly addresses children. It sounds like he's writing to an entire congregation. Was the congregation divided when they read these letters? When he's talking about, in these letters, the status. I've heard this about you. Hey, here's what's going on. Here's where I plan to go next. Here's what I've heard about you. Sounds like the biblical pattern is some amount of transparency. Now, I think there's a variety of ways this could be done. I have wondered, and this may not be correct, but I've wondered, should we have what we consider business meetings just in front of the congregation? It can be done orderly. It's not part of the service, but it can be done orderly, like in 1 Corinthians 14, one man speaking at a time. It's transparency. Doesn't have to be that. What if we just read a summary of here's what we decided the last meeting? Read it out to everyone, as Paul had his letters read out to everyone. At the minimum, we can at least hear all the same what decisions were last made. Some amount of transparency. Now, again, I will say a lot of this I'm terrible at. I need to be better about walking away from such meetings and saying, okay, here's what went on, here's what was decided. But just like those text messages I might get and say, yeah, I'll respond, and then it's a week or two later and I've not responded, a lot of times that information goes in my head that way. And so I'm at fault here. But I'm telling you, a lot of things this evening, these are all things I struggle with. And that's probably why I'm sharing them with you. That's probably why these were the things that came to my mind, is because these are the things I'm bad at. I think I'm bad at. I'm not the best at checking on people and visiting people. My wife will tell you, I like to come home and be alone. Be quiet. It's just my style. But that doesn't absolve me just because that's my preference, because I've got no duty to self. I've got a duty to community, in addition to my duty to God. But I need to check on people, visit better. I know I'm hard to hear often. I mumble. Again, ask Jennifer. I'm used to having to say things two or three times, pretty much everywhere I go, because I mumble. I try to work on it. I try to eat a microphone. But there's things we can do just to help increase our volume. And again, I am terrible about updating people. And when I do that, I don't do my part to make everyone feel like they're a part of my world. Now, our congregation, this is our team. These are our brothers and sisters in Christ. We need everyone to feel a part of it. Everyone to know they're an important, vital part of it, because I care about them and because we all care about each other in this goal, in this role as a servant, in the duties we have to each other and shared together to God. So helping one another, everyone in this building especially, it's crucial to our identity as a servant. And it's also important to note that the helpers need helping. As I learn to help, I'm going to need you to help teach me to help. It's not a handout. It's like any other skill. There's some mentorship. There is some cohesion. There is some ongoing teaching. There's checking on each other, and there's updating each other. But that seems to be the central theme here. Each other. together, unified. So the better we help each other and to be of the same mindset, to truly be assembled together, the better we can serve God, the better we can serve one another. So that's all my thoughts on this topic tonight. Again, the theme for the week is trying to be a better servant. This is just one possible way, one possible realm of that. You get to hear me one more time tomorrow, but it will be a whole different topic. My goal tomorrow is to talk about how to strive for excellence. Because it's one thing to do and to try to be enough. It's another thing to try to be the best you can. And I think that is what God would have of us in our goal to serve others and in our goal to serve Him. Serve Him the best that we can. And that requires motivation. That's the lesson for tonight. The invitation is always open. The services of the church are always available. And if no brother has any other comment that he would like to add, then I'll turn the service back over to the brethren.